Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Under the Every Student Succeeds Act, states must create an indicator of English language proficiency for K through 12 students. More than 80 different languages are spoken in homes across South Dakota. Some school districts have very few English language learners, but in districts like Huron, nearly one in four students speak a language other than English at home. And as the population of Sioux Falls grows and diversifies, the need for resources increases. Demi Moon is the Director of Federal Programs and Assessment for the Sioux Falls School District. She's also worked with English as a Second Language programs in both Huron and Sioux Falls. Demi joins us in the studios now to discuss the need for English language learning programs in the state and how the state's ESSA plan might help. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So population is changing. Has it always been part of the makeup of the state to have a fair number of English language learners?
Well, there have always been English language learners in the state when you consider the Native American population that exists in the state of South Dakota and too on the colonies in South Dakota in the remote areas. Those children are primarily German-speaking students, and so they would also qualify as English language learners. Over the past, I would say, probably 10 to 12 years, though, the more traditional English language learner that people think of when that term comes to mind, those students have increased, the number of those students have increased throughout the state. However, the majority of those English language learner populations have grown in Huron and in Sioux Falls. So, yes, as the populations grow and the diversity grows, so too does our need to increase services for the students who don't speak English in their home as a primary language.
And the number of languages, 80.
80,
yes. That's a whole lot of, I mean, so when you're dealing with these kids, are you dealing with them one-on-one? Do you break them into groups of kids who speak Spanish, kids who speak an Asian language? How do you handle that? Is it individualized?
That's an excellent question. Just like our Spanish immersion, elementary and middle schools here in Sioux Falls teach the language of acquisition of Spanish by speaking Spanish all throughout their day. That, too, is how we teach these students English. It's more of an immersion type of a program in the sense that in order to increase their English language acquisition, we surround their day, surround them in rich, appropriate, grammatically correct English language, and that is how we help them acquire that English language. So no, it's not translating. It's not trying to group them by their original language and help them make the correlation, you know, between their language and the English language, because with 80 languages, that would be a huge feat.
Right.
And research-based practices don't suggest that that's the best way to teach a foreign language. And so we teach them English by immersing them in English and different other good solid teaching strategies to help them bring that acquisition, you know, up to speed as quickly as possible so that they can be successful in the academic classroom.
Right. So what kind of resources are we talking about that these kiddos need to help them, you know, not only master English, but then be academically successful?
Absolutely. One of the resources that doesn't always kind of come up as an added resource, but is really smaller class sizes. If you try to imagine putting 28 to 30 students who don't speak English as their primary language in a classroom to teach them English, that with one teacher, that's going to be a huge feat. So trying to break that down into a little bit smaller class sizes. And when you do that, then that causes a need for additional staff. So that's one additional resource. There are print, there are educational resources that are available. There's assistive technology that can help students with that language acquisition. There are a lot of resources that are created by different publishing companies, whether it be, you know, picture reference, so a lot of word and picture correlation type of, whether it be print material or posters to put on the wall, but things to help those students correlate the English words with what they mean, anything that we can do to build background. So sometimes in the classroom, those instructional practices of constantly circling back around and helping students build that background knowledge that they might not have, because not only do they not speak English, they're not from this area. So we say that the language acquisition process is really learning to speak English, learning to read English, learning to write English, learning, to read, to write, to speak, to listen to English and understand what it means. But it's also the acculturation piece. So a lot of our ELL students come to South Dakota or to the United States in general from countries where they don't share the same cultural practices that we do. So the burden isn't just the foreign language. The burden is also how to pay your water bill, how to use a refrigerator, things that they just may not have in the refugee camps or the areas that they come from.
So a lot of stuff is happening at home as well.
Absolutely.
Which is true of kids who speak English. It's not just about what happens when they come to school, but now you've got, and then you're dealing with parents too, who might not be immersed in English like their students are when they go to school for 6-7 hours a day.
And they might be coming to us at the age of 10 and not having any prior formal schooling in their native language or in the English language. They might come to us at the age of 16 and with the country they come from, school wasn't a requirement or it wasn't a necessity for survival. And our law says you have to be in school until you're 18. And so we put them into a formal education setting, and it's the first time maybe ever that they've been in that type of a setting. So there's a lot of things outside of just academic, how to learn to dissect a frog and how to learn to balance an equation. Those aren't the priority areas for those students as they transition into this new culture. And their parent, like you said, the parents might not speak English. And so if there are behavior issues or special education needs or other things, medical needs that might surface as we get them enrolled in a formal education setting, that requires some interpreting services to communicate with the parents and to communicate with the child so that we fully understand what they're not grasping or what might be their hurdle or their difficulty. And so when you talk about added resources, one of our huge expenses in working with students and families that kind of comes to mind immediately when we talk about resources is the need for interpreters to, as we grow them into their language acquisition, we have to be able to communicate with them from the get-go.
What's the expectation for a student for proficiency? How long and how long can they be here before we really say they need to be spun up on English enough to do this work without assistance? And how are you measuring it?
Those are great questions. One of the things with this new ESSA Act that has come through in terms of that expectation, especially at the state of South Dakota level, is that they have identified what appropriate growth is more on an age basis. So there is less time expected to reach that language proficiency if you're talking about a kindergartner who's learning for the first time, maybe versus a ninth grader who's coming in and they're 15 years old and they're learning. You expect that language acquisition or that language proficiency to come at a much slower rate than it would for a kindergartner. And so they have adapted appropriate growth models for the different age levels as students scatter throughout the grades K through 12 level. And so that's been one of the greatest benefits, I think. You know, it helps us as educators to kind of measure if they're on that right track for growth and not expecting a one-size-fits-all approach to that language proficiency model. Typically, I would tell you that a kindergartner coming in, a five-year-old could come in, and by the end of kindergarten, they might be proficient enough to function in an academic classroom. An eighth grader might take 4 or 5 years before they are at that proficiency level where you could put them into a regular biology class and they could be successful. There's social language, but there's also academic language. And often that academic language at those higher levels, upper middle school, high school, we're talking about years of background knowledge that we have spent through our formal education process in the United States, building that vocabulary and building those foundational skills. And if you're coming in and you're placed right into eighth grade, there isn't that kindergarten through seventh grade amount of time to build that background knowledge because we're also building the language proficiency at the same time. So those kiddos have a huge uphill battle, and we have some amazing teachers, not just in Sioux Falls, but in the state of South Dakota, some amazing consultants that work with our teachers to help them use the skills that have been researched to be best practice for that type of instruction. But it really... there really is a lot of passion and a lot of, I would say, heart that goes into to the teaching with our ELL students, and it's an amazing thing to see, and the success that they get, the excitement in their parents' eyes when they know that they're learning and that they have doors that are going to open for them and lots of opportunities as they continue to grow academically and increase their language proficiency.
How do you measure it? Are they tested?
Yes, they are. That's a great question. The State of South Dakota belongs to the WIDA Consortium, which is 39 states across the country that come together, and WIDA provides those states with an assessment called the Access for ELLs 2.0. And every year, if a student is identified as ELL, which means they haven't exited the program yet, they will continue to take that assessment every year, and that assessment measures their speaking, their listening, their reading, and their writing, and then they get a composite score for those four components built together. And a student starting with the ESSA moving forward, so for this next year, students have to reach a 5.0 or better on that to exit the ELL services. And that ranges from a 1 to a 6, that assessment does. So students receive anything coming in and knowing nothing and being very entry level, they would start out at a 1. And a 5 is now what the state considers an exit criteria.
But are they going to get official language instruction? Or is it all immersion-based and, you know, separate assistance? They're not going to sit in an English class and say this, you know, break it down.
Absolutely. We, at the elementary level, we put them in, and you know, if they come here first year to the country, they go to our immersion elementary school here in Sioux Falls. Okay. And that's usually about a 1 to 1.5 year tenure that those students, you know, they're in that school. But if they exit, if they can reach that, what we have set as criteria, not the 5.0 criteria, but that point where we feel they're able to be successful in a regular classroom, we graduate them. They have graduation ceremonies 4 times a year at the elementary immersion center. And then those students go out into their home elementary school and begin that education with support. We continue to provide them language acquisition support in terms of we have ELL teachers in those center-based elementary schools. And those students then go into the regular classroom and they start learning the science and the social studies and the health curriculum. And they take all the other classes that all the other students do, but they continue to have that language support until they reach that 5.0 level on the yearly access test. Middle school, we have a little bit smaller scale of that type of an immersion process. And then again, at the high school, we do too. So every kid is different. Every kid is on an individualized path to success. But yes, we do put them in the regular classroom within 2 years of arriving in the country.
What's the federal government's role in English learning in South Dakota? How is there support from the federal government? Does this come from local local school districts?
It's a combination of both. The local school district has an obligation to provide equal support in terms of what we spend per pupil on any other student in the school district. So the school district comes in first with their local support equal to what we would provide any other student. Then the federal government provides funds through grants that flow through the state and then down to the districts. And those are in terms of what is called the Title III grant. And so we receive some additional support from the federal government through the Title III grant. But we also receive a little bit of additional support for every student who is at a 4.0 or lower on that WIDA access assessment from our state per pupil allocation. So the state recognizes also that it takes just a little bit more to support and to get these students to a success level. And so they give us a little bit more of a per pupil allocation amount each year.
What are the challenges for, so we talked about the concentrations of English language learners, lots in Sioux Falls, lots in Huron. What are some of the challenges for some of the towns that maybe have one or two students?
That's a great question. You know, it's almost harder when you have fewer students because you're not able to develop that comprehensive programming that communities like Huron and Sioux Falls can when they have a larger population, and you can really get those students into the appropriate class sizes and you can get them the teacher allocations that are needed. I remember when we first grew from just a very, very select number of ELL students in Huron to a year later, we had over 100 quite quickly. And those rapid growth rates come with growing pains as well. Right. But it really is almost more manageable from an administrative perspective and a teaching perspective when you have a moderate number of students that you can instruct in a similar fashion rather than one or two. And so those school districts, whether they have one or they have 1,000, we're all required to provide the same amount of support. We all are held to the same standards as far as measuring that language proficiency, providing the supports, whether they be instructional supports or, you know, behavioral supports. All of those things are required by the state, and that comes from the federal regulations. And so it is a little bit more challenging in those smaller communities. What they do, though, is they will join together and they will form consortiums. So we have a couple consortiums in the state of South Dakota, which is multi-school districts that have come together. And so because of their small number of students, they might not have enough funding to hire an ELL teacher by themselves, but maybe four or five area school districts can come together and hire one ELL teacher, and then they share that teacher among the districts, or they share that instructional resource, and then that person can help within the several different smaller school districts.
When we look at the state's ESSA plan, is it aspirational? Is it, you think it's achievable to really, and how does it help those vulnerable populations? We've got just really a minute to answer that.
Okay.
That doozy of a
that's
question.
Say, that's kind of a big one for 60 seconds, but I do think it's manageable. There was a lot of consultation that went on in order to create the state's plan that is currently being sent to the federal government for approval. And a lot of local school district personnel, whether they be administrators or teachers right in the ELL classrooms, were involved in the construction of the plan at the state level. And so I do think what we've come up with as a state plan has had plenty of ability for voice from many different people and the expertise of those who are working right on the front lines to make sure that our students do gain, you know, this language acquisition, that or language proficiency that will allow them to be successful. So I think it's achievable. It has to be lofty or it wouldn't be, they wouldn't be goals.
Right.
So we have to make sure that we continue to raise the bar for ourselves as educators, but we also want our children to be successful, and we want them to have, that we want that bar to be at an achievable rate. And so far, we'll see, time will tell, but so far I think we're set up in a much better place than we were even with the last plan. It's wonderful to have the ELL come in under Title I regulations and be a part of our state accountability, because it puts the ELL population on the radar for everybody, and they can't right. just be a kind of shadow thought.
There's a whole lot at stake for those individual kids and for the communities
as well. Yes.
Getting them through.
But a wonderful opportunity for us to grow in cultural diversity across
right.
the state of South Dakota.
Absolutely. What those kids can contribute when
yes.
they're given the right skills
Absolutely.
Is remarkable. Demi Moon, Director of Federal Programs and Assessment for the Sioux Falls School District, talking to us about English language learning for South Dakota students. The state's ESSA plan is available online and open for public comment through Friday. You can find that on the Department of Education's website, doe.sd.gov. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.